thank you for the opportunity to give a talk, and I apologize that I was not able to do that in person. So my talk will consist of two parts. The first part is based on the work with Anton Kapustin that is already published, and it's some I'll describe some systematic approach to extract invariants associated with Berry phase from ground states of some topological lattice systems. And the second part of my talk will be about some work in progress. I will try to describe some construction that allows to generate examples, such non-trivial classes. But first, let me describe what is their general goal. So the general goal is to understand the space of topological order states of quantum many-body systems at zero temperature. And by many-body system, I mean some lattice system, simply because it's rather difficult to deal with systems of particles. We don't have a good methods to do this. We often assume that, so we consider only states which are ground states of some a gap system or some analog of this condition that kind of guarantees that we have short range correlations. We don't have any delocalized excitations. So all delocalized excitations are gapped. By equivalence relation between states, I mean that, I say that two states are equivalent if one can be produced from another by some local Hamiltonian evolution. So if you prepare the state in the lab and then try to evolve it with some arbitrary Hamiltonian, there is some topological information encoded in the state that is not destroyed, as long as we preserve locality. There is some general belief that there is a certain class of such states and lattice systems which have continuous limit described by some topological field theory. And all this topological information somehow must be encoded in the entanglement structure of the state. So if we have a large enough piece of material, we should be able to extract full information about topological field theory. Of course, in general, if you consider some gap system, it is not true that like any such system has a continuous limit in the usual sense, because we know that there are examples like fractons, and the complexity it seems like it grows rapidly when we increase the dimension. So it becomes intractable quickly, and probably there is no hope to understand anything about such states in full generality, but at least we can hope that there is a certain class that has this continuum limit, but mathematical definition of such class is yet to be understood. However, there are certain subclasses of topological order states, for example, a class of invertible states introduced by Kitaev that has a mathematical definition. And it's very easy to describe. It's some states that we can produce from a factorized state by some local Hamiltonian evolution, possibly with some disentangled garbage. And we can hope to classify all such states. There is some good proposal how the answer should look like, but we don't understand even this. We don't fully understand even how to classify this. So it would be good to design some methods which allow us to study the spaces. Classes of states. And one way to probe the space of such states is to construct some invariants of families of such states. So if we have some finite dimensional manifold that parameterizes some family of states, we may hope to construct some topological invariants of such families, by topological invariants, I mean something that we can compute locally. So by having some piece of material and the answer does not depend which piece of material we choose for the computation. In particular, it implies that this topological invariants are invariant on the local Hamiltonian evolution, because we can perform this Hamiltonian evolution first in one region of the space and then in another. So if we can compute it in one region and get one answer, we can use this like independence on where we compute it to compute it in another region with a state where it looks like something already after the evolution. So locality of all these invariants is sort of important. And well, the simplest family of states is just a point. In this case, topological invariance, this is just information of the connected component of the space. And if we have, say, two states and we computed this invariant and it is different, then it means that the states cannot be in the same connected component. In general, if you consider some arbitrary lattice system, we probably don't have good intuition to guess what sort of inference we should expect. But if we assume that there is some effective field series that describes it, we can guess what sort of invariance we should expect and then try to define it microscopically. So what I'm going to discuss is invariance which we can defy rigorously on the lattice without assuming anything about effective field theory. The simplest invariant everyone is familiar with is a Berry class of a family of zero-dimensional systems, where by zero-dimensional system I mean some system of interacting spins with no locality at all. If you're interested in pure states of such systems, they just describe by projective complex projective space, and in the thermodynamic limit, it's infinite dimensional, and the only non-trivial homotopy group is second homotopy group, and it manifests itself. The fact that we have this non-trivial homotopy group manifests itself in the existence of a certain cohomology class for any family of such states. Of course, there are many ways to define it, but I'll define it in a way that is suitable for many-body generalization. So if you have some family of states, we can choose a certain one form value to observables such that this formula holds. So it basically means that if you have two states and the path between the states on this family, then we can use this one form to evolve. We can take its pullback to this path and evolve our state with the corresponding Hamiltonian, so that this Hamiltonian generates evolution of the state along the path. And we have a curvature of this one form, which average gives us a Berry curvature. And the cohomology class of this Berry curvature is what usually called Berry class. And for zero-dimensional system, it is quantized simply because it corresponds to the curvature of certain line bundle in this family, defined by this family of states.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sure.
Why are you considering the non-abelian curvature here? Isn't it just, aren't you just talking about a single state as a function of parameters?
Right. Yes, I could also define this Berry curvature in this way. I'm just trying to formulate it in the way that is suitable for generalization for many-body systems. So it is just possible to define it in this way, you can also do that just by working with this line bundle. Yeah, the problem is many-body systems that you won't have this line bundle in the first place.
Can you remind me what this curly D is that is in the connection?
I will define it later. So here for zero-dimensional systems, you can just think of it as a bounded operator on this Hilbert space.
Okay.
Okay. So if we try to generalize it for some many-body system, the first problem that we encounter is that if we consider, let's say, some large piece of material in a pure state, and we consider Hilbert space with some humongous Hilbert space, if we just consider some families of pure states in this Hilbert space, it wouldn't respect locality of the system, because there might be some state like all spins up and all spin downs, or cat dead, like some cat dead or cat alive, and we consider some path between the state, of course we wouldn't have any locality of the system. So one thing that we should ensure, we should consider only those families which sort of correspond to equivalence relation that we impose on states, that we can evolve the state along this path using some local Hamiltonian. But even if we restrict our consideration to such states and construct this curvature F, its average wouldn't be defined in the thermodynamic limit, because the curvature now would just correspond to this Hamiltonian that grows with the volume of the system. And if we don't impose any translational invariance, the thing won't be defined in the thermodynamic limit. And we can also try to see why we don't really get like a two-dimensional homology class for many-body systems, just by considering what sort of, well, if we assume that the system can be described by some effective field theory, we can see what sort of cohomology classes we can see in this effective field theory, simply by consideration what sort of topological terms we can write down. And if we have some a family of such field theories parameterized by some manifold M, we can slowly vary the parameters of this family. The only natural topological terms that we can write down in terms of the fields corresponding to these parameters is the one that is on this slide. And it depends on a certain D plus one form gauge field. So it seems like the only thing that we can compose out of it is certain D plus two dimensional class, not a two dimensional class that we expect for zero dimensional system. And it is of course consistent because like when D is equal to this, DB just is two dimensional. Okay, so two questions that we have to answer in order to generalize the curvature for many body systems is first, what sort of class of states we should consider, because it might be not possible to generalize it for like arbitrary many body state, some locality. And second question is what we really mean by families of states. So how to mathematically formalize this fact that we only consider families of states which are related by some local Hamiltonians. So let me clarify a bit what I really mean by local Hamiltonian. So in this talk, I'm going to talk about Hamiltonians which are sums of uniformly bounded almost local terms, each of which is traceless. So almost local simply means that all these terms in the Hamiltonians they would be well approximated by some observables on disk of finite radius, and the error decays rapidly with the distance. By rapidly, I mean faster than any power. And all these observables would be bounded in the usual norm, and they will be traceless. It means simply that the average in the maximally mixed state is zero. It's just convenient to get rid of the ambiguity related to a constant for each term, because it doesn't really affect any evolution. It simply multiplies the state by a phase. And I won't be very like mathematically precise about many statements, but I just want to emphasize that for this particular problem, everything can be done rigorously. And if you're interested, you can have a look at the paper. Let me introduce also some notation. So first of all, we have the space of all local Hamiltonians, which I denote by D. Well, in zero dimension, this D was just, we have only a single term for this Hamiltonian, and that's why I was denoting, so I was using this notation in the zero dimensional case simply for bounded operators. For many body systems, it's important that we only consider this Hamiltonians, which are sums of local terms, because we already have some notion of locality. And we also consider Hamiltonians, like for some given state psi, we consider Hamiltonians which preserves the state psi. So it means that for any observable, if we try to see how it changes with evolution with respect to this Hamiltonian, its average, the average of this change must be zero. So that I denote by deep psi. And finally, if I have some regions, some region of collection of region, then I denote by deep psi A or deep psi of A1 dot AN, some Hamiltonians which are localized on the intersection of such region. In this notation is introduced in order to formulate the condition on the state that allows us to generalize this Berry curvature for many body systems. More precisely, Berry classes, because there will be no curvature actually. The condition is the following. So suppose we have some Hamiltonian that preserves a state, and we want to require that we can. It is possible to decompose this Hamiltonian into pieces such that each of them does not excite the state psi. So for example, if I work on a two-dimensional system and I have some true partition of it, like on this picture, then it is obviously true that I can decompose any local Hamiltonian into three Hamiltonians, each of which localized in some cone on this two-dimensional plane. But the condition on the state psi state that I can decompose it in a way such that each of these pieces does not excite the state psi. And we also require that it is true for all low dimensional cones. So for example, if I have some Hamiltonian localized on two half lines on this picture, then I can also split it into two terms, each of which does not excite the state psi. This condition might be a bit artificial, but the fact is that it is actually true for any gap state. So we can prove that for any gap state, this condition is satisfied using Lib-Robinson bound and certain methods that we use in what's called quasi-adiabatic continuation. So there is some certain integral transform developed by Kitaev, Hastings, and Osborne that allows us to prove this property for any gap state.
Question?
Yes.
Is this decomposition approximate or exact?
This decomposition is exact, but the localization that I'm stating. So when I'm saying that some Hamiltonian is localized, it means that it is localized with possible. So it has some tails outside of this region.
I see.
But all the statements are exact.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. And more precise formulation of this condition, I can form a certain complex that consists of this Hamiltonians localized on various regions on the system, on this cones of various dimensions. And there are some natural inclusion maps, so you can define a certain complex in such Hamiltonians. And this condition can be stated that this complex is exact. Okay, now let me show how this condition helps us with defining Berry classes for one-dimensional systems. Let's define what we mean by family of one-dimensional states. Suppose we have some smooth manifold M, and we have some map from this smooth manifold to set of states. We want to say, for which set this thing really defines some smooth family of states. And the condition that we impose is that there is a certain one-form valued in this local Hamiltonians such that the same condition that we impose for in zero dimension holds. So that for any pass, we can evolve the state using this one-form. And in the same way, we can define the curvature, which is now takes values in two forms, valued in Hamiltonians. It is easy to show that this two form does not excite our state psi simply because Durham differential squares to zero. Now we can use the property of the state psi that since we have some Hamiltonian that does not excite the state, we can decompose it into two pieces, each of which is localized on a half line. This decomposition, of course, is not unique. There are like many ambiguities. However, if we consider, we can construct certain quantity that is does not depend on all these ambiguities. We can take the Scalarian derivative of one piece of this f, let's say f a zero, and it defines a certain three form that takes values in local observables. A priori, if we take some covariant derivative of a local Hamiltonian, it would be also some local Hamiltonian. However, since this covariant derivative of F is zero, And since FA0 is a sum of local terms, far away from this interface, this DF0, it actually has vanishing terms. So if you sum them all up, we would get some local observable, which is somehow localized on this interface. And now we can take the average of this observable, and it defines, well, and consider its cohomology class. So the statement is that this cohomology class does not depend on the ambiguities. In fact, like the average of this observable may depend on the choice of regions or the choice of splitting. So we don't have sort of canonical curvature of this. Well, the structure, geometric structure that actually describes it is abelian drop. So it, there is a way in which one can make sense of it. This abelian structure for invertible straight for invertible states, and the curvature of this is not canonical. However, if you consider just the cohomology class of it, then it is canonical. And for invertible states, we can also describe the space of all such states. One can show that its homotopy type is actually KZ3. The fact that we have non-trivial third homotopy group is responsible again for the existence of this Berry class. So if we do this computation for invertible states, then we always get quantized classes. Okay, so I'm not gonna talk about like general construction because we won't really use it in the following. I'm just wanna say that there is a certain way to extract D plus two dimensional class from a system in arbitrary dimension. It can be encoded in a certain Maurer-Cartan equation that looks like on the slide. And we can again produce some D plus, the solutions of this equation, they have some components which take values in D plus two dimensional forms and with values in local observables. And we can take averages and they give us these classes. But what I'm going to talk about in the following about generalization of this Berry classes when there is some symmetry present in the system. We always assume that this symmetry is continuous. Well, in this talk is continuous, so I'll remark a bit about finite dimensional symmetry or finite group symmetry. We assume that the symmetry corresponds to some on-site action on the lattice. And again, from this effective field theory consideration, we can guess what sort of invariance we should get. We can look at what sort of topological terms we can write down in terms of the gauge fields, the ground gauge fields. For U1 gauge field, we can write the simplest terms like in 2 plus 1D would be just the Chern-Simons term. That everyone knows is, should be responsible for some Hall conductivity. So the question is how to extract this Hall conductivity directly from the state with some properties. Yes.
Before you continue, for the part without symmetry, I just want to make sure you said mm-hmm. we can define the Berry classes. Is the only assumption that we are considering some gapped ground state? There's no other assumption?
Yes. So actually, the assumption is even weaker in the sense that the one that I described that we can do the splitting of Hamiltonians which do not excite the state, but any gapped state it satisfies this condition. So this construction works for any gapped state. You don't have to assume anything about interaction. The only thing you have to assume that you have a rapid decay of interaction for this Hamiltonian. So for example. I don't know how to generalize it for interaction that decays as a power. But if it decays faster than any powers and state is gapped, then it works.
Mm-hmm. When you say gapped state, you also include parallel gapped states.
Do you? Sorry, which gap states?
When you say gapped state, do you mean the gap in the bulk?
Yes, I always consider a system like in the infinite volume. It's a statement about the bulk. Yes, but chiral phases are also included into this class. Thanks. I mean, those which have some gapless boundary.
Thanks.
Okay, so let me describe how this procedure works in the simplest case again of the one gauge field corresponds to Hall conductance. So suppose we have some system which is U1 invariant, and the action of this U1 symmetry corresponds to sum of on-site terms. There is some charge Q that preserves the state. And using the property of the state psi, we can split it into three terms, each of which is localized on some cone on this two-dimensional plane. Of course, this, again, this decomposition is not unique, but suppose we have we made some choice, and we actually can always make a choice such that all these pieces are U1 invariant, because if they are not, we can simply take the average over U1 action. And since the sum is going to be the same, again, this total charge Q, we would get new Q tildes, U1 invariant tildes, satisfying, which are also localized on these cones. So now suppose we have such a decomposition. What we can do, we can have a look on the commutators of such Hamiltonians localized on cones. And naively, if we consider commutative Hamiltonians localized on A0 and A1, then we get some, again, some local Hamiltonian, which is localized on this half line between them. However, we can know that if we add to Q tilde A0, Q tilde A1, then far away from this triple point, the action on those local terms in Q tilde A1, it would be the same as the action of the total charge. And since Q tilde A1 is invariant under it, the action would be trivial. And addition of this Q tilde A1 to Q tilde A0, it doesn't change this commutator. So in fact, this Hamiltonian that we get when commute this two pieces, then it is actually some local observable. And we can take the average of this observable and the claim again that it defines the invariance of the state.
Question. So maybe you mentioned this, but I missed it. To what extent does this splitting into this Q tilde always exist?
So it is. It exists for any gap state.
Okay.
However, you can try to work with a more general class of states, which probably it's very difficult to check whether the state is gapped or not. But if you somehow can ensure that this splitting exists, then you already get an invariant for the state. So it's a weaker condition than a gap, but any gap state satisfies this condition.
I see.
And that can be shown rigorously.
You always mention it's a weaker condition than being gapped, but in which cases do you have examples of cases where this condition is satisfied, but it's gapless?
I will try to describe a class of states in the second part of my talk for which it is easier to check this condition.
Oh, okay.
Maybe they also gapped, but I don't know. Okay. The claim is that this defines an invariant, and one actually proves some properties of this invariant for invertible states. One can prove its quantization for fermionic and bosonic systems. Of course, though I use this fancy name of a covariant Berry class, this invariant is very well known as a Hall conductance. But since Hall conductance is defined for systems, and I'm only talking about, well, like with some Hamiltonian, and I'm only talking about some state, I just use this term, a covariant Berry class, to emphasize that it is invariant of a state, and its actual origin is a Berry phase. This invariant is defined, so we don't really have to impose this condition about splitting for any Hamiltonian preserving the state. For this particular case, we can just require this for this charge that corresponds to this U1 symmetry. So as long as we have this decomposition, we have this invariant. Construction allows easily to generalize everything for arbitrary terms that you can, topological terms that you can write down using background gauge fields, for internal symmetries or some parameters on the space. For example, terms like Thouless pump or some high dimensional generalization of Hall conductance. You can also define invariants corresponding to these terms. However, we don't know how to define invariants for which correspond to some special structure that emerges in the continuum, for example, gravitational Chern-Simons term. And I think that we need a better understanding of the class of states we are working with in order to define invariants for the special structure. Now, it is also possible to discuss invariants with finite group symmetry for invertible states. The procedure is sort of similar to the one described in the paper by Nayak and Els. However, we can only define it in low dimensions because in high dimensions we don't know much information about this invertible states. Once we can understand the topology of the states, in principle, the classification this of states with symmetry is straightforward. It reduces us to some homotopy theoretic problem.
Right.
Sorry, but go ahead.
I mean, so you say low dimension, but I think for the group cohomology SPTs, in some sense, this Berry phase data is like kind of the only thing that you need probably to obtain those. So can you?
Yes, but we don't know. We don't know whether this group cohomology data is kind of split in high dimensions, or whether we can talk about group cohomology class for dimensions. Like if there is some K invariant that kind of relates it to some special structure, then it might well. It may not, maybe there is no, well, we cannot talk about group cohomology classes, but in principle, yes. So in principle, all this group cohomology is somehow captured by this Berry phase.
Sorry, what do you mean by split in this context?
Well, I mean, there might be some topological term that can kind of mix topological terms between symmetry and gravitational terms.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we know that can occur, but I was saying if you just ignore the possibility of those invariants, you can at least describe the cohomology invariants.
Yes, that's true.
But you can't, I think in the high energy situation, like if you really are writing it down in the continuum, like we know there are K invariants that are non-trivial. So you cannot extract the cohomology class back from the SPT. I think that's the point that Nikita's making.
Yes, thank you.
I just wanted to ask to make sure. So this Hall conductance formula you wrote down.
Uh-huh.
So for non-interacting fermions, it reduces to this real space Chern number formula in the appendix.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I also have a question. Does this work for anti-unitary symmetry?
No. So, well, I haven't really thought about it.
I see. Yeah, just curious whether we can understand some of this time reversal protected SPTs without having to say put the system on CP2 or something.
Yeah, maybe it is possible. Yeah, I just haven't really thought much about it.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now. Let me proceed with the second part of my talk. I should emphasize that some work in progress. I hope I won't make big mistakes, but I'll describe some general construction that produces some state on the lattice from any rational unitary vertex algebra. Let me first discuss some general facts about topological order in two dimensions. Non-chiral states are relatively well understood because we have some good models with the corresponding topological order by computing projector Hamiltonians, or we can describe the state by tensor networks. And this construction is known as string net models or Levin-Benn construction. But the situation is very different with chiral topological order because we don't really have some exactly solvable models. We have only few of them. there are various candidates that people have proposed for chiral states and lattice spin system inspired by Laughlin wave function. Though we can check some properties of the state numerically, it is hard to justify that they really represent the right topological phase. And to the best of my knowledge, there is no general construction that would allow to realize some, let's say, topological order coming from some good rational vertex algebra. For example, even the simplest, well, in some sense, the simplest non-trivial state in two dimensions that is a generator of invertible states, it was conjectured by Kitaev, and it's called E8 state, but there is no explicit lattice construction for this state. It would be desirable to have some way that allows to resolve all this issue. So I'm going to propose the following construction. We start with some good unitary rational vertex separator algebra, where by good, I mean that it has a good representation category, so that it is modular. I will consider some lattice system. I first describe it for finite lattice system. Each side of this lattice system would have some infinite dimensional Hilbert space. However, I want to emphasize that each side will be finally entangled with the rest. So only a few levels of this infinite dimensional Hilbert space, they really participate in the game. And you can approximate the state very well by just considering only finitely many levels of this Hilbert space. So it would be close to a pure state. But since we want to construct, in some sense, exact states, we have to deal with the infinite dimensional Hilbert space. By state operator correspondence, if we have some unit disk, like any vector in the Hilbert space for states on the circle, on the boundary of this disk, can be produced by insertion of some vertex operator, of some vertex operator. And suppose we have, let's imagine that we have this lattice on a complex plane, we have a collection of holomorphic embeddings of disks into this complex plane, which is such that they're all disjoint. So like on this picture. We can produce any vector in the Hilbert space on the boundary of this disk-like region by inserting certain vertex operator. So we have a natural map from tensor product of all these Hilbert spaces into complex numbers. And another way of thinking about it is that suppose we have cut out some holes out of a complex plane, and we think of this Hilbert space as describing modes living on the boundary of each hole. Vertex separator algebra produces a natural map that corresponds to amplitude of the process with fixed states on the boundaries of this hole. And this construction is defined for like any collection of these disks. And it defines a certain pure state in their tensor product of all this Hilbert spaces, each of which is identified with the vacuum module of this vertex algebra. And the reason why this actually a vector is because the norm, if you try to compute the norm of this map, then it is actually finite because it has a simple geometric interpretation. It just corresponds to gluing of two copies of the surface along these holes, and it's some finite number. So this pure state, it is defined for any collection of holes. However, what I'm going to say is that if we arrange these holes into some sort of lattice, then we actually have a rather strong locality structure on the state. And to see how it works, first let us know that in order to compute the, we can compute the partition function of the surface by cutting it into some elementary pieces, like on this picture. So each such elementary piece, it's like a sphere with four holes, and it defines a tensor with four legs. So this partition function corresponds to partition function of a certain tensor model. And if you want to compute observables, like average of some observables in this model, we just have to consider the partition function of modified tensor network model, where the tensors in the vicinity of the support of this observable are modified. I want to note that if we have large holes, then the necks of these elementary pieces, they are very thin. Therefore, when we compute this, when we contract all these tensors, then all the states with high weight running through the legs of this necks, they're all exponentially suppressed. And if we consider correlations between observables which are far away from each other, this suppression, it may generate, well, effectively generate a gap for the system. So this correlation would be exponentially decaying. And that is a claim that I'm going to make, that the states actually defined in the thermodynamic limit. So we don't really have to worry about the boundary and just consider lattice with growing size. And all these correlations are exponentially decaying. I don't know how to show it for arbitrary size of the holes, though I believe it is true, but at least I can show it for some small enough, but finite, finite widths of the snacks. And the reason why, so if we just consider like, let's say two holes on the plane and we consider some bounded operators acting on this hole, then the correlation would not decay exponentially. They would decay only algebraically, like in the CFT. However, this like large number of holes, they effectively screen all the correlations. If you consider observables in the bulk, we have exponential decay of correlation. But if you consider some observables on the boundary, they would still have some decay that is polynomial, and it seems like impossible to get rid of it. We can ask what happens if we try to deform this picture, if we kind of change the size of the holes or insert some vertex operators to define new states. I claim that all these insertions variation, they can be performed by some local Hamiltonian evolution acting on this lattice system. And the reason is basically because if we are, for example, insert some vertex operator into somewhere, this picture, somewhere in this sheet that define the state, then it just modifies a particular element of the tensor network model. Because of this rapid decay of correlations, this tensor model, one can show that such change of this state that it defines, it can be performed by some local unitary. Of course, it has some tails, but the localization of the unitary is rather strong. So this tails decay rapidly with the distance. Because like any variation of the model, it can be performed by some composition of insertion of such vertex operators, I claim that all the states that we get by varying the size of the hole, they're all in the same topological phase. It's a bit counterintuitive what happens if you try to shrink these holes. So if the holes become smaller and smaller, naively each spin is becoming more and more disentangled. However, in the dual picture, so if you consider on the necks of this elementary pieces, they are growing as we decrease the size of these holes. So the correlation length is becoming bigger and bigger. And though if like one may try to disentangle the state by making this hole smaller and smaller, the correlation length becoming bigger and bigger. And at some point, it is not allowed to perform next change because the correlation might be already of the size of the system. So in this sense, you cannot destroy them by some local, like some evolution of the Hamiltonian if you already restricted this Hamiltonian to have some range. Okay, and one more point that I want to emphasize that the states are actually not tensor network states in contrast to Levin-Van models. So though you can compute the averages using some auxiliary statistical mechanics model, the state itself is not, you cannot represent it as some something that like some contraction of tensors with four auxiliary legs and one physical leg. However, what you can do, you can consider a stack of the state with its complex conjugated copy, and you can get this state as a certain limit of tensor network states. That is also kind of easy to describe. If you have this two copies of states, you can produce by some local Hamiltonian evolution some wormholes between these two states, and you can change the size of these wormholes. We're always assuming all this wormhole that we have only trivial anions running, because otherwise it would not be possible to do it by local evolution. You can consider the limit when this wormhole shrink to zero size, then you get this original state. But if this wormhole has some finite size, then you cut the surface into some tensors with four auxiliary legs and two physical legs.
Just make sure I understand the claim. So the claim is the EA and its the image copy are exactly decoupled in the—
Yes, exactly decoupled in the limit.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now let me show show you that. So what I just said, it's all just some intuitive arguments, but let me try to argue that the states actually realize some non-trivial topological order. And for that, we can compute this invariant that we have defined if the state satisfies the property that we used in defining this invariant. And it is natural to check that this property is satisfied because of this structure of the state, how they are produced, because of vertex operator algebra. So suppose we start with some vertex operator algebra that has U1 symmetry. And it naturally, so we have some natural action of U1 charge on the vacuum model. So we have some natural on-site action of the symmetry on our lattice model. Our state that is U1 invariant. We can look what happens if we act by this charge in some finite region. So suppose we act on these four holes in the center of the square. Such action can be performed by just inserting some integrals of the current along these holes. Since we can deform the contours, we can replace this insertion around four holes by just insertion about some large loop around this region A. Since insertion of each operator corresponds to just some local change of the state that can be performed by action of some local observable, the whole integral can be represented as a sum of some local terms localized on the boundary. That basically allows us to split the charge into three pieces, each of which does not excite the state. Because even though each piece may excite the state, we can insert this sum of local terms on the boundary of this region. The resulting Hamiltonian would be again some Hamiltonian localized on the cone and would not excite the state. And the total sum of all these charges would be zero. We can try to compute this invariant. It's easy to do because we can represent action of these charges using these contour integrals. You can show that this invariant sigma, it reduces to, it only depends on, first of all, on the singular part of operator product expansion of the currents. The sigma is exactly equal to the level of this current algebra. So it does not depend on any details of the holes. And of course, you can generalize it for non-abelian symmetry in a straightforward way. Okay, I guess that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Nikita. I guess we're open for questions. Let me start with one that's not completely well formulated, but the picture you just showed, at least in terms of the figure, looks a lot like quantum Hall physics.
Yes.
So in quantum Hall, at least in Landau levels, there are ways for people to write down Hamiltonians where the ground state are exactly those, you know, Laughlin or those states. So is there any connection between that and the picture you're presenting, or it's separated thing?
So there are some proposals of to realize some chiral state, and people write down some Hamiltonians. But to the best of my knowledge, first of all, I don't know any example where you can show that this Hamiltonian is gapped, or that the state is actually in the right topological order. So you can check numerically that some correlations decay, let's say like correlations between two spins, but I don't even know about the situation when you consider some large observables. So this construction is sort of attempt to find some, well, in some sense exact, well, some states that you really can check that they correspond to topological order. And also when people try to define the states using Laughlin wave function, it's not clear how to define it for more complicated vertex algebra. And for example, I'm not aware of any proposal for this E8 state in this way. But in this picture, it's very natural because you just have to put this E8 state into the construction, and you naturally get it is invertible, because if you have the state, its inverse is just a complex conjugated copy. And the path that connects it to a trivial factorized state, it just corresponds to creation of this wormholes.
And just to make sure, so the state you end up getting, do they have zero correlation length, or the correlation length is finite?
It's finite.
It's finite.
Yes, the correlation, you can make it arbitrary small by making this holes larger and larger. So in the limit, when they touch each other, the correlation length is zero. But in this limit, each spin is becoming like infinitely entangled. So you can kind of decrease the entanglement of the spin, but the price that you pay is that correlation length goal.
I see. Okay. Makes sense. All right, thanks. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yeah, Theo.
So thanks. I wanted to get you to say a bit more about this issue of the split versus non-split spectrum questions in the very phase stuff. So the very phase, like, you don't expect, as we said, you don't expect to be able to extract the actual cohomology class in in a GSPT just from the phase itself, because of course it should be able to have a non-trivial K invariant with the kind of gravitational terms. What can the Berry phase technology, like, access these other degrees in the cohomology? Making sense in the question?
Well, yeah, the first, I guess, question is whether it's possible to extract something about this mixed terms or just gravitational terms. And I don't know. I think we should first understand how this special structure emerged from this discrete microscopic description in order to answer this question. So all I describe is it's only concerned with this Berry phase for which you don't have to know this special structure.
And one answer might be that you're seeing just a class with real coefficients, and probably this won't have this class won't be integral in high enough dimension.
So it is integral only, well, actually I expect integrability only for invertible states. If you consider some topologically ordered states, some weird things like fractons, which are gapped and but do not describe by any conventional field theory, these classes are still well defined. So you can define it, but I don't know what the interpretation and the effective terms. So yeah, it's kind of weird that we can define some D plus two dimensional class for any gap system, not necessarily the one that is described by field theory. Maybe they are not very useful in situation.
And you think it'll really be like in a sort of, I mean, here on the page, you say something is just valued in with real coefficients, but you think it really lifts to an integral class, or like a sort of integer divided by a number, like, you know, fraction, like sort of rational numbers, or maybe rational with prescribed denominator?
Well, I expect there is a class of states that I'm mostly care about, which kind of describe a topological field theory, and for them, it should be some rational number. But if you just consider some gap state, I don't have any argument why it cannot be irrational.
Okay.
But for invertible state, I think it should be integral.
You think it'll be in it? Okay.
Well, okay, so maybe not integral in dimensions where we have this non-trivial k invariance, but
right, and that's what I have in mind. It's like maybe I'm in a high enough dimension that I can pick up the k invariant from you know, just to the first Polsnikov number, and then I would expect a fraction by three, for instance. Is this something you've, can you, I mean, maybe you just have, can't even go that high to test, I don't know.
Yeah, I can do this, but maybe you're right.
Well, so related to that, I mean, there's a simple question, which is for any, let's say for a discrete group, for any element of the group cohomology of that group, we can write down a wave function. The question, and then according to the, you know, the simplest SPT classification based on group cohomology, you know, each subweight function will be in a different phase. But then I don't think that's something that's being rigorously proven. Is that something that you can answer, whether all such weight, every wave function for a different cohomology class is in a different phase?
It's just not even true.
Yes, I'm not sure that it is true.
It may not be true.
I think it's strictly not true in high enough dimension. I think I can just write down invertible, like I think I can give you an invertible, like GSPTs that have a commuting projector model in high enough dimension where it's not true. In like dimension 6 or 7 or something like that. I think it's high enough.
So then, but then what would go wrong in terms of computing this invariant? You compute it, you get it, you think it's just going to be not, I mean, if you computed and get an integer, then you would say, well, this integer cannot change. So
I think that, well, this was what I was trying to press on, is that I think in the examples I can, that the examples that I know how to, that I would be able to write down, it'll sort of, it'll be not true, but it'll only be not true by a sort of purely, sort of kind of a purely torsion thing. It'll be like, not, it'll be true after rationalizing. So his invariant was only valued in the real numbers. And so it'll be true up to some like factor of 2 or something, up to a factor of 3, whatever it is.
Yes, I think so you are right. I think you're right.
If you're sort of killing the more fine integral structure, then you're not going to see this difference.
Yeah, actually the quantization of this classes in low dimension is rather complicated because you have to construct you have to construct this cohomology classes, and when you construct it, so you have to glue various like functions on various overlaps, and it's becoming like more and more complicated with the dimension. And I guess there are some properties of the state that you use in order to build this like check homology classes, at some point they fail if the dimension is high enough. And that's why we don't get quantization.
So just to be clear, what you're saying is you have a class with in the cohomology with real coefficients, but if you try to lift it to integer coefficients, that it would be trivialized.
I think my claim is that in the examples that I can think of, I could imagine situations where sort of you certainly for any integer cohomology class, you can write down the SPT that you have in mind. And if you try to reconstruct the cohomology class, you'll have it find an ambiguity, but you'll find that you can reconstruct, you know, 4 times the cohomology class, but you can't reconstruct the cohomology class itself. That's the type of thing I have in mind. So sort of, but yeah, it's like, I think it's exactly what we said. That sort of this Barry phase class is defined, but it's somehow losing some data from the there is an actual class which doesn't have an integral left, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, right. Thanks.
I mean, what I really want to say is that there's a class that has a lift to, like, the lift comes from iz and not hz. And you didn't see the difference in the very phase stuff because IR and HR are the same.
All right. Any other question? Okay. If not, let's.
Can I ask one more?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
These chiral states. Mm-hmm. You're describing a construction for the wave function, right? There's no Hamiltonian at this point.
Right. So I didn't know how to construct a Hamiltonian that one can show that it is gapped. One can construct some Hamiltonian using stress energy tensor, but I think it would be well. I have some conjecture, but I don't know how to prove it. It would be nice to have a good Hamiltonian for the states.
Thanks.
There's no more question. Let's thank Nikita again.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.